welcome to our program, and we have Tom Stapleton with us today. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. We've got a nice sunny day down here, and who could be happier?
So, Tom, you're going to discuss what with us today?
Well, we were last time we talked, we were talking about our camp up in Canada, our wilderness setting up there, and we talked about the reasons why we're up there. We never really got into the why we're there. We talked about the what, but not the why. And so I thought maybe that might be a good idea today to do that. Okay. Well, we're about to have some meetings down in Texas, and the theme of the meetings is present truth. You know, Peter talks about present truth, that we be established in present truth. Now that was back, 2000 years ago.
Right.
But I just wonder if the church should be aware of present truth today. What do you think, Linda?
That would be great, except everybody has their own opinion of what present truth is.
Well,
and what different things they want to emphasize.
Exactly. Right. So one thing that I've found is whatever a truth that a person has, that needs to be the most important thing that's preached. And we're all kind of like that. You know, the thing that we are talking about is the most important thing, and everyone has to convert to that idea. However, that's not realistic. You know, I compare it to Noah. Noah had a message unlike the previous generations that went before him, and his message was a present truth message, and that is repent or die. You know, it's time to build an ark and get on the boat and be saved. That would have been deemed as present truth for his generation. So if we can compare it like that, the present truth for our generation is Yeshua is coming back. And he's coming back, it seems pretty obvious for those that are studying. He's coming back pretty soon. So I would say the present truth that would surround that concept would be important for us to understand. Now, in Matthew 24, Yeshua actually points us to the events that are going to be transpiring before the second coming. He said, when you see all these things, know that the end is near, even at the door. So what are those things that he's talking about? I think it's probably pretty obvious that he's talking about the things that he was talking about in that prophecy of Matthew 24. It's also found in Luke 21 and Mark 13. However, in Luke, it's just a little bit different. He adds some more color to it that Matthew and Mark don't contain, which helps us. So as we're looking at these prophecies, we can see the events that are going to happen just before the second coming. And those events, we can see a lot of them out there in the world today. However, there's one event in that prophecy that people have seemed to either written off or done away with somehow. And I can't help but think that that's the work of the enemy. If God is trying to make something known, and it's very important, his enemy would try and downplay that bit of information. Sound like I'm on the right track?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Well, Yeshua in Matthew 24 goes through a whole bunch of the signs, but the first sign that he says, before he gets into the signs of his coming, he says, don't be deceived. Four times he references deception in Matthew 24. So he's talking to his people. Now, God is trying to tell us as his people, as those that are grafted into the house of Israel, is don't be deceived. And he lays it out. We're not going to get into those details, but we need to understand that the greatest deceptions are going to be geared for the house of Israel, because those are the ones that the enemy doesn't have in his fold as yet. So we need to be totally aware of the deceptions that are crafted for the elect. We need to understand what they are. We're not going to get into that. It's a whole nother topic, but we don't want to overlook that concept. So he goes through and he talks about wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and pestilence. And then he goes through and you're going to be delivered up and so on. We won't take time to read it all, but Matthew 24 contains it. And then in verse 15, he says, this gospel is going to go to all the world. Now, that word all is all-encompassing. So it's going to all the world before he comes. And then the very next verse, he says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, let the reader understand. It's like he went through the prophecy and he went right up until the end. And it's like, but here, you can't miss this point, you guys. During this time period of the time of the end, there's going to be this thing called the abomination of desolation. And right. He pinpointed it and he said, spoken of by Daniel the prophet. So, Linda, let me ask you this question. You're asking me questions. I'm going to ask you a question. It's to all those that are listening. Where do you think a good place to start looking would be to find out who the abomination of desolation is? What I was asking, which is this obvious question, obvious answer to the question. It's ridiculous to ask, but if Yeshua is talking about the time of the end and he goes right up until the time of the end and he says, okay, let's backtrack here. When you see this event that's spoken of by Daniel the prophet, my question is, where should we be looking for who this guy is to figure out?
In the book of Daniel.
This is what, and you know, when I'm doing meetings, and I will do this in, and so anyone that's going to go to those meetings in Texas, the one we're going to have, or any other ones, I'm going to ask that question to the whole audience. And what I did last time, it's just not too long ago, I asked the audience when I said that, I said, how many of you recently remember when the last time you studied Daniel diligently to figure out who the abomination of desolation was? And you know, I didn't see one hand in the audience.
So, yeah.
Yes. So I'm talking about just your average person.
Right, is not studying.
Really.
And you're supposed to teach meat that is in due season, right? So what is in due season right now? The coming of the Messiah is in due season. So that's the things you need to be studying. It should be the books of the prophets. It should be including Daniel. It should be the book of Revelations. That should be your main thing that you're studying right now, because that is meat in due season, is it not?
And that's what I see too. You know, we like to study about the kingdom and you know, the millennium and after the millennium, and that's wonderful stuff. There's just huge promises in that.
Yes.
However, we've got to get to the millennium. That's what people are kind of missing. We've got to get there. And so there's a lot of warning in Scripture of how we're going to get there. And if we don't understand the how, it's looking like, according to Yeshua's words, is that we could very possibly be deceived. So this is where, you know, I love studying about the millennium and after the millennium when the earth is recreated and all of that stuff. It's great stuff. All those promises are bound up and give us hope, and it's incredible. But we've got to get there. And if the deception's coming before that time, we've got to be totally in tune with what Yeshua has said. And if he points us back to Daniel, I'll tell you, Linda, Daniel, and I know a lot of people would be upset with this, but Daniel has been my focus for over 30 years of diligent study. And when I started getting into Daniel, I realized that Revelation, the book of Revelation, is a sister book. It's a companion book. You cannot study one without the other. I have people come to me and they say, oh, I've got all the book of Revelation figured out. And I said, well, how's the book of Daniel doing? Oh, no, I don't study the book of Daniel. I'll tell you what, you're only dealing with half the pieces of the puzzle. You need both of those books together. Let me give you an example that's so simple when you hear of it. In Daniel chapter 7, we've got four beasts. We have a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a dreadful beast, which is kind of, he's got lots of horns and he's kind of nasty, ugly. He kind of reminds me of a dragon. Well, in the book of Revelation in chapter 13, we have a single beast now made up of a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a dreadful beast. But now they're all on one beast. They're all together. So what I'm telling people is there's no coincidence that we've got exactly the same beast. We've got them in Daniel as separate beasts, but we've got them in Revelation as all on one beast. This is no less than in Daniel, we see the beginnings of the empires that will form a one world order together, and they will be 10 kings. We see that in Revelation chapter 17.
Absolutely.
But in chapter 13, we see all these beasts together. So Daniel has a revelation of the beast before they join. Revelation has John's revelation is a revelation of the one world order with these beasts of Daniel now working together as one. And so when we see Daniel and Revelation fit like a glove, hand in glove, we can see that, hey, if we don't study these books together, we are going to come to the wrong conclusions. No question about it.
And absolutely, that's the case. And I also know that Revelation 17 reveals who that beast are and the meaning of that, correct?
Exactly. It sure does. And that actually is carryover from Daniel. Yes. Daniel, we see this little horn power comes up in Daniel 7, Daniel 8, and we see him again in Daniel 11 and 12. Daniel 10 through 12 is a complete vision. 12 is basically the interpretation of Daniel 10 through 12. And the time periods we see, we won't get into those today, but these are some of the things actually that I will be presenting in Texas and other seminars that I'm going to be having this winter. So it takes a little more time to expand on those, but these are things that I believe to be present truth today, because that is what is immediately before us now.
I absolutely see that. And if you look at Revelation 17, it looks like a succession of kingdoms that have come through time, and it builds up to one kingdom that's going to reign over, I would say, I hate to put it in the vernacular of the word Gentiles, because that word has been so overused, right? But
right.
And wrongly used, but it basically is a combination of, I could see two lines coming through in history, because I study history. And I see the line that comes from Abraham through the patriarchs into David, all the way up to Queen Elizabeth. I see that bloodline. But then nobody sees the other bloodline, which comes in from Esau and Nimrod and goes up into Assyria, which it talks about Assyria, that'll be your rod, right, that comes against you. And then it works its way up into the Roman Empire. And I prove this through history, how Esau's descendants went into Rome and Eastern Roman Empire. They married into the Eastern Roman Empire. And they went on into Russia. And so it looks like our ancestors went north and west. That line, the other line, which is Esau's line, went all the way from south and went up east. And so, you know, you see these two lines in history, and they're going in opposite directions. You know, I see two direct lines. That's what I see. I see a system of Satan that Satan has, and I see a system that were the Israelites. And I see that the war that's coming down is between the two.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of what I was thinking would be put into today, which is exactly what you're saying. I'm coming from a little different angle, but we're saying exactly the same thing. That's the amazing part. No matter how you attack truth, you can come at it from several different angles and use different information as you come through, but you're going to arrive at the same truth. And that's really where we're going. Yeah. So this is interesting what you're saying. There's a great statement that says, if you do not learn the lessons of history, you are doomed to repeat them.
Yes.
And I would say that the world's about to repeat some history, some nasty history. And if we can learn that lesson, we that are studying the scriptures, we can avoid a lot of the pitfalls that are coming very soon to us. Now, we'll just go back to this prophecy just to expand on what you just said. It's amazing. Yeshua points us back to Daniel. It's amazing that he goes through the events and he says, but look, when you see this, take notice. This is very important. That's really what he's saying. Now, when you go back into the prophecy, the very first sign that he says that ushers into the time of the end is war. Interesting. So we can, let's just make a conclusion. I'm just going to draw some conclusions here. We're not done yet, but we'll draw conclusions, a premise that what I'm going to say is that war begins the downward spiral. I have a saying that some people don't like, but it's probably the most vivid thing that we can think of. This war will flush the toilet of this world. We're going down when this thing happens. And what a lot of people, you ask them, well, what is this event? They have no clue. They come from anything from aliens coming to, you know, a financial breakdown to, you know, Donald Trump. He's the end of all things. I mean, I'm being silly right now, but, yes. You know, the people come up with all kinds of ideas, but they're not based on scripture. And why is that? Because they're not looking in the place that Messiah told us to look. They're looking at the news, you know, what's the mark of the beast? That's another one. Well, let's have a look at what scripture says the mark of the beast is, and maybe we might get an idea about what it actually is. So Yeshua talked about war, and he talked about the abomination of desolation found in the book of Daniel. Now, we're not going to take time to look at all these chapters, but I'm just going to give a few verses here. Okay. Daniel chapter 8, verse 14, 13 and 14. He says, then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the certain one who was speaking, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, the giving both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said to me, for 2,300 days, which should really be translated evenings and mornings, and there's a reason for that, then the sanctuary should be cleansed. This is Yeshua's reference into the book of Daniel. That's the first time that this abomination of desolation comes up. Now let's turn to another one in Daniel chapter 11. And it should be noted that Daniel chapter 10 through 12 is a parallel chapter of Daniel 8. And a lot of people don't understand this, but the way God puts prophecy together, the book of Revelation is written like this as well. It's a repeat and enlargement. So Daniel chapter 7 is the same prophecy as Daniel chapter 8, which is the same prophecy as Daniel 10 through 12. God has repeated and enlarged each time he's gone through. And we can see this, you know, in Joseph's time, he gave the Pharaoh a dream and then he gave him another dream. Well, were the dreams the same? Well, they had different information, but the dreams meant the same thing. They just had different symbols. And this is how God works in dreams. And so if you have things that you can compare from one dream to another, there's a good chance that they're the same vision, the same story that God is trying to tell us. Well, we see the same thing in Daniel chapter 11. In verse 30 and 31, it says, for ships from Cyprus, this is important, from Cyprus, and if you look in the margin, it says Western lands, especially Cyprus. Okay, Western lands. Just park that somewhere where you can retrieve it sometime. It says, for ships from Cyprus shall come against him, therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against what? The Holy Covenant, and do damage. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. So we here at the end of time can be aware that there will be a power that comes in that wars against the Holy Covenant. Now, if he's warring against the Holy Covenant, who are the people that he's warring against? Those who keep the Holy Covenant. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
So there will be a power that wars against the Holy Covenant. This is what is referred to by Yeshua as the abomination of desolation. This is this power, this abomination that causes desolation, another way you can look at it. Because when you forsake the Holy Covenant, what are you going to be left with? Desolation. In verse 31, it tells us, and forces shall be mustered by him, this power, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifice and place there the abomination of desolation. This is this power that Yeshua is talking about. So if we can just start there for a moment. So if, I know in history, people have tried to place these prophecies in history, but a clear, you know, 2020 hindsight reading of these prophecies, what I believe to be an objective view into these prophecies, we can see pretty clearly that these prophecies have not been correctly applied in history. They have been applied, but the word correctly is the important thing. Now, if we go back to Daniel 8, where it talked about in verse 14, the abomination of desolation, if we can see that this abomination of desolation, the actual event, the big event, there's been little ones, like I'm talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, this has been applied to him. It's been applied in other places in history. But I asked the question, is it possible that they were just types of the real deal at the time of the end?
History keeps repeating itself, doesn't it?
Right, right. So we have the big event, the main event coming at the end, the climax of the story, when we have the real deal, the real abomination of desolation that causes utter destruction. And this is what Yeshua was talking about. In Daniel chapter 8, we're just going to go back there because we want to go in there because it has everything to do with the words of Yeshua. Now, in Daniel chapter 8, we have actually Yeshua showing up. And this is what people don't understand. He shows up in Daniel chapter 11 and 12 as well. And we see here he gives Daniel some information. He says to Gabriel, he's in verse 10, verse 16 in Daniel chapter 8, he says, "And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision." So this is actually Yeshua calling to Gabriel in the vision, telling Gabriel to make this man understand the vision. Now we have to understand who Gabriel is. Gabriel is the one who sits next to the throne of the Almighty. Gabriel is the man of prophecy. He's the angel of prophecy. He comes to enlighten Joseph and Mary of the first coming of the Messiah. Very interesting. So Gabriel is the one that announces the coming of the Messiah. Not only the first coming, but the second coming. Can't miss this point. Now, Gabriel tells now Daniel in verse 17, he says, "So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, 'Understand, son of man, that the vision refers to what? The time of the end.'" So I ask, when should we be looking for a fulfillment of this vision?
At the time of the end, right?
Right, at the time of the end. And we can see as students of the word that we have to be getting very close to the time of the end. So Daniel's confused. It says in verse 18, he says, "Now as he was speaking with me, I was in deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, 'Look,'" in other words, Daniel, just in case you didn't get what I just said, I'm going to say it again, but just a little differently. He said, "Look, I'm making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time, the end shall be." We can't miss this. That word, appointed time, is moed.
Holy day.
It's a holy time, that's for sure. Now, when we look back at the first coming of the Messiah, did that happen at an appointed time?
Yes, I believe it did. I see that it happened very close to the Feast of Tabernacles, somewhere in that fall feast time frame.
Right. And he fulfilled parts of the aspects of the festival calendar. in the Feast of Tabernacles at his first coming. Also, at Passover, he was the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. We can see here that God has worked in the first coming of the Messiah through the appointed times. He not only died at the specific time, the Passover lamb, but he was raised at the time of first fruits. He poured out his spirit at the time of the outpouring of the rain on Pentecost. And this is what people aren't getting. If we miss this point, we're going to miss a lot. Now, if God used his festival calendar so clearly at the first coming, Daniel is telling us through Yeshua and through Gabriel, he is telling us that at the appointed time, at the Moed, at the end, God is going to show up again. Can't miss this. Now,
and in the appointed time is really critical because he is telling you he has a specific date that he has in mind to come.
Exactly. And it's even more than that is in the life of Yeshua, his birth was at an appointed time. His death was at an appointed time. His resurrection was at an appointed time. The outpouring of the Spirit was at an appointed time. My question is it possible that the entire festival calendar could be played out in its order at the time of the end? Now, I don't think we can overlook that.
I'm laughing to myself. We'll finally realize what calendar is the correct one at that point.
Exactly. God's people are going to be on his calendar. They will not be caught unawares because they're going to know. It says in Revelation chapter 14, verse 6, it says, the hour of his judgment has come, and this will be proclaimed by his followers. How do they know the hour of his judgment has come? Easy. They know the festival calendar when the judgment begins, and that's how they're going to give that message. Now, I don't want to go there. I want to get back to Daniel, but this all is so interesting to me as I study these things. So let's just go back to Daniel. So if we can establish that there is a possibility, because I know a lot of people want to put Daniel 8 back in history and say it's, you know, the kings of Media and Persia and Cyrus and Darius and all of this, and say that's the king of Greece, which is Alexander the Great, and so on. And this is an application of the prophecy, but I question whether it's a fulfillment. Just like Antiochus Epiphanes is an application, but is it actually a fulfillment? These things were types of the real.
Yes.
And so I think at the end, we may be looking, some may say another application, I call it a fulfillment, when every specification in the prophecy will meet 100% fulfillment. Now,
so Tom, so that I can just jump in here a second, because I totally agree with what you're saying. And that is that the meaning of some of these terms are broader and symbolic. And so when it talks about like Jerusalem, and you read Zechariah 2, it says Jerusalem will be made with cities, unwalled cities, and it'll be many people and many towns, and it'll have cattle. And so he's trying to tell you that the meaning of these terms, sometimes like Greece and Media Persia and all of these, that they may be symbolic of something that's going to be at the end time, very similar, but not the old meanings of them. Are we on the same page with that? Because the symbolism changes through time.
Yes. And this is amazing. And like, as you have studied history and so on, you're seeing this, and we haven't talked about this interview before. I want our listeners to notice this. This is not scripted. And so it's once we open the doors on some of this stuff, you know, can I digress just for a moment?
Yes, absolutely.
Somebody told me that they had a dream not too long ago. And, you know, people, oh, dreams, dreams, dreams. You know what? I take that very seriously. God has worked through dreams in the past. And we're told in the book of Acts that he's going to work through dreams that he gives his people in the future. Somebody tells me they have a dream. If I believe they are seeking after God's heart, I'm all ears. I want to hear what they have to say. This person had a dream, and they were in a dark room, and they saw doors open all around. There was doors all the way around the room, and they saw the doors cracked open, and they saw light, bright white gold-colored light coming through the doors. And they said, I wasn't sure what that was. And then they were told that they need to clean up the house. And that was it. And I thought, oh my goodness. What I got out of it was that God has a whole lot of light that he wants to give his people, but they need to clean their houses up so they can walk through those doors and see the light that he has for his people. I have this idea that he's going to pour it on in the time of the end for those that are willing to sacrifice. We have to sacrifice our idols, and people don't like to hear that, but it's just the reality of it. That was a side note. I want to come back. Let's come back.
Yeah, and so, it does talk about how your children, your daughters and sons will dream dreams. The people at the end time are your sons and daughters, and they will dream dreams.
And exactly. So
he's pointing to the fact that, yes, I've had several dreams that I know were prophetic, and I know you probably have had too.
Yeah, it's interesting. We don't want to lose sight of that, because that's how God impresses us. A dream leaves a deep impression in our minds. So if something as a dream, if it leaves us such a deep impression, doesn't it seem logical that God would use that? Because he wants to deeply impress us. So now let's go back to this dream that Daniel had left a deep impression on him, which Yeshua points to in Matthew 24. And he happens to say, we're going to get to the meat of the matter here. He says, don't be deceived. Then the very next thing he says that begins the time of the end is war. And everything else follows. Can't miss that point. War is the first thing. Well, if this vision of Daniel is about the time of the end, we should be able to look at this vision and see what the events are. See if they line up with Matthew 24. Well, you'll never guess, Linda, what the very first thing is in the vision. It's a revelation of a power. And if we can just read through the first 8 verses, that's going to get us to where we need to go. So if everyone can just bear with me, if you have your Bibles with you, I would ask you to open it. In chapter 8 of Daniel, in verse 1, it starts, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one that appeared to me the first time. So he's referencing Daniel 7. And I would like to suggest that it's not only after in time, but it's after in kind. When we compare the two visions, we can see similarities between them. Now he goes on to say in Daniel 2, he said, I saw in the vision, and it so happened while I was looking, that I was in Shushan, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. So Daniel is in a palace. It's in the modern day, what we would call Iran, southwestern Iran, and he sees in the vision that he's been transported to a certain place. Now, this is important. There's a reason why God takes him from the palace in vision to this river. Some translations will say the widening of the Ulai or the Ulai Canal. This is where the river meets the Hiddekel, River, which is also found in Daniel 11. Goes on to say, then I lifted my eyes and saw, and there was standing beside the river, which a ram, which had two horns. The two horns were high. One was higher than the other. And the higher one came up last. Now, these are details. We're not going to get into the details now, but these are details that are important. Goes on in verse 4. He says, I saw the ram pushing west, northward, and southward, so that no beast could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. Now, this is a power, as we've seen in the vision, the time of the end. This is a ram, a power, a kingdom, if you will, that has two horns. The two horns represented in this kingdom, this ram kingdom, are the powers that lead the ram. The horns are the kingdoms that lead the ram, and we're going to find out who they are. They lead this ram. This ram is said to become great. These kingdoms that lead, these two horns that lead the ram, in verse 20, if we go down, or verse 20, we can see who they are. It says, the ram which you saw, having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia.
Persia, yes.
Now, this is where it becomes very interesting. In Daniel's day, when the Medo-Persian Empire, shortly after Daniel probably died, we're not sure exactly when he died, but the kingdom of Media and Persia, their empire, at the height of their empire, stretched from Afghanistan and Pakistan westward, all the way across the southern Russia states. We're talking about Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and all the other stands that are there.
Yes.
And right across Turkey, that's northern, over northern Iran and Iraq and Syria, right across to Turkey, all the way to Greece. Greece was actually the dividing line. This is very interesting. Greece was the dividing line of what now we call the westernized nations. Okay. Greece is the beginning of the West, so to speak. And this is where we referenced earlier about shifts from Cyprus or Western lands. We can't miss these points. So from Greece, it becomes West, as far as Daniel was concerned. He talks about the kings of Media and Persia as at the height of their empire, stretching from Afghanistan and Pakistan all the way west across to Turkey, also northern Africa as far as Libya. This was the then known Medo-Persian Empire as it grew into the height of its empire.
Since you keep talking about Chittim, I just want to mention to you that when Josephus wrote about Chittim, he wasn't just talking about just Cyprus. He was also talking about the entire islands and coastlands around the Mediterranean Sea, which is exactly what you're talking about. But that would eventually turn into the Roman Empire.
Well, yeah, that's and the Roman Empire stretched its hands across the globe.
Yes.
that's what became the westernized nations. Exactly. Great point. Yeah. And so we see at the time of the end that there would be a Medo-Persian empire that would reign over a larger empire, and that would be a ram empire. The kings of Media and Persia would dictate to the ram, that would be its entire empire. So what are we talking about here at the time of the end? Well, you take that, and I challenge anyone to do this, and I do this at my seminars. I take that ancient map of Media and Persia, the height of its empire, and I draw that out. And if I lift those lines up and I set those down today, it is exactly the area that the Arab nations and Iran encompass.
Yes.
Now that's ominous. That is ominous. So at the time of the end, we see an empire that's made up of those kings and a bigger empire of the Islamic nations, over 50 nations, 1.5 billion people on this planet, nearly a quarter of its population. Now you tell me if that nation is not a great nation. The fear of this world should be, if that nation ever operates as one, we're in real trouble. Yes. I don't know if anybody knows what the end game or an end goal of the Orthodox, can I use that term, the Orthodox, mm-hmm. or the, I don't want to use the term radical because people get the wrong idea when I do that. I will be as bold to say that the Islamic faith, most people that adhere to it in a tighter way, recognize that they want Sharia law as the law of this world. That's yes, their end game. That's their yes. end game. Whether they're going to arrive at it peacefully or by war could be a bit of a controversy. But to me, it's almost irrelevant at this point. What we're talking about is their view of this world is it would be far better if everyone was under Sharia law. Now, when we look at the news and see what's going on in France and Germany and Europe and so on, we can see what is actually happening. There are areas, and I know people in Europe and in England. I have a good friend in England, and he tells me there are areas in London and in other places in Europe, or in other places in Europe and in England specifically, where he's from, that the police do not even go there. Whole areas, because these people have said, we will take care of our own, thank you. You don't need to interfere. They're actually carrying out Sharia law in these areas where we don't go. Now, let me ask this question. If I know this, do you think the CIA knows this? Do you think the FBI knows this? Do you think President Donald Trump has advisors that are telling him this? I mean, really, let's be realistic. What is actually going on? Now, we could get into a bunch of conspiracies, and we don't want to do that. We just want to deal with the facts as we can see them out there in the world. If the Donald Trumps of the world and the Theresa Mays of the world know what's going on, which I believe they do, this is why the move for nationalism, this is why the move for to protect our borders, this is what this is all about. This is what's going on. They recognize the threat. They recognize this threat. Now, what I'm wondering if they actually know what the prophecies say. Because this goat, this Islamic power, it says, is going to become very great. Well, let's go into another prophecy, shall we? Abraham, thousands of years ago, was given a promise because he was very concerned about his son. Not his son Isaac, but his son Ishmael, because he was going to have to put him out. And God says, don't worry about Ishmael. I'll take care of him. He says, I'm going to make him a great nation. Oh my goodness. Is this what we have today? Do we have the fulfillment of the promise of Abraham in Ishmael as the Islamic nations? Oh, this is something that we need to consider. I do believe we have seen the fulfillment of that come to pass. Now, we're not going to get into this, but I just want to lay this out there for people. There is a move, unlike any other in the times past, of uniting the Islamic world under one head. This is happening in Turkey. This is happening in Iran. Iran and Turkey are bridging across the Gulf that they've had for many years on the premise that they need to unite Islam as a whole. They have accused the Western nations to put a division between Shia and Sunni Muslims, the two great divides of, it's kind of like Protestantism and Catholicism. The right. Western nations have been accused by these nations as trying to put a divide between these so they do not unite. And we can see this is what happens with Saudi Arabia and Iran. There's this great divide. But Islam has not always been that divided, but it's only been recently. What there is a move now between some great nations is to bridge that chasm, to bring Islam united. The Erdogan, the president of Turkey, has a plan to do this, and it is a very good plan. I'm not saying it's good from my perspective, but it's very good from an Islamic perspective, and right. It's detailed. And I've been reading about this, and it's his own words. And he's speaking freely of this in Turkey and with the president of Iran and the Ayatollah Khomeini's and others in the Islamic world. They have a plan to unite. They are going to do what they can to fulfill what they believe is their purpose in this world. And that is to rule. That is to rule under Sharia law. The Western nations, I do not believe, are going to sit idly by and watch this happen. We know the end of the story. We believe what the Bible says. And Allah is not going to rule. Yeshua is going to rule. So something drastic has to change. Well, in the book of Daniel, it tells us about that war. He goes on to say, after he says that this ram power would become great, in verse 5 of Daniel chapter 8, he says, "And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat," this is a different animal, "came from the west." Very interesting. It says, "came from the west across the surface of the whole earth." Oh my goodness. Has anyone ever looked at a map as it is laid out flat? What is the power from the west?
The power from the west is America.
Oh my. I mean, this is how clear the prophecies are. It's talking about a war.
My translation says he comes out of the western part of the world. You know,
there you go.
There you go. A little bit more detail.
Oh yeah. And it goes on to say, he comes from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground.
He's flying.
He's flying, right. Or he's taking a boat, one or the other, right. Or he's doing both.
Right.
But the idea is he cannot get to the kings of Media and Persia unless he takes a flight.
Right. And so it's really interesting because that could only be fulfilled on our time, right? Because we have planes now.
Exactly.
Years ago, they didn't have planes. So
yes.
So this fulfillment is just jumping off the page.
Oh, yeah. And the problem is people aren't reading this. People need to know this. And so these not only planes, Linda, but we have aircraft carriers that carry planes.
Yes.
So we can get very close to the battleground now. In fact, just around the corner, and this just gets better. So let's keep going here.
And this was a partial fulfillment when you look at this in World War I and World War II, if you remember, because Woodrow Wilson would have brought the planes from World War II, right, and into that same area. Well, not exactly the same area, but that same just area.
Well, sure, and I think that's a really cool point that you just said, because that should have been a signal for us to read this. Because, yes, he brought planes, he brought warships from the west across the surface of the whole earth to the European land, which is actually connected to the Middle East as well. So it really is a preview of what's going on here. So he says in verse 5, we want to read that, finish reading this verse. It says, "without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes." I don't want to get into this, some homework that people can do, but when we have an animal in prophecy, and we see this in Revelation and in other places in Scripture, when we have an animal that represents a larger body, the horns represent the kingdoms or the powers that control or that lead that.
Right.
Now, it says that there's a notable horn. So who's the notable horn?
Is a leader, I would think. Yes.
Right, is the leader. Now, if this Western power is actually what we've been talking about, is areas on the globe that are past Greece or Greece and past, a group of Western nations that is led by a single power or one leading the pack, who could this possibly be? Who would lead the charge against an Islamic group of nations?
Three guesses and two don't count.
I love that. Hey, we'll throw the first two out. What's your last guess?
My guess is probably the UN or America.
America.
No, it's not going to sit back and allow this to happen.
They are not going to allow Islam to control the world. They are not going to allow that. So we have to ask the question. Number one, who's the larger power, group of nations? And who's the notable horn? Has to be the goat. The notable horn is the one leading the pack of the beasts, or the amalgamation of the powers that be. The notable horn has to be the United States of America. The United States of America has been the most favored nation that this world has ever known. Their support for, and this is what we can't miss, their support for Israel and the Judeo-Christian values has placed it in an arena where God has been able to pour out his blessings on this people.
Yes.
Unlike any nations in the past. In fact, interestingly enough, we can see a type of this in the book of Daniel. What other nation got blessings from God poured out on it because it accepted some Judeo values? This might be a tricky question for some, but when we remember what Nebuchadnezzar declared, he declared that let the God of Daniel be praised. And Nebuchadnezzar was blessed for that. We saw that. Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar had his problems, but I dare say that the president of the United States might have his problems as well. But nevertheless, the United States is still blessed beyond question. Now, here's the interesting part. It doesn't finish there. The story doesn't finish there. It goes on to say that this notable horn will lead the charge against this ram. In verse 6 it says, then he came to the ram that had two horns, which had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. Now this is a question that I have. Why would anyone run at somebody else with furious power? I think it's because this power, this ram power, has done something to raise the ire of the goat. In other words, it's done something just absolutely crazy. Well, let's read on. It says, he was moved, this goat power was moved with rage against the ram power. He attacked the ram. He broke his two horns. There was no power. How much power? No power in the ram to withstand him. In fact, it goes on to say, but he cast him down. The goat power cast the ram down to the ground and trampled him. And there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Oh my goodness. What do we have here? In today's terms, we have the annihilation of the power of Islam right here in the book of Daniel. Many people are asking me, are we going to have an Islamic Antichrist? Well, I'll tell you what, if you actually understood what the prophecy said, you're going to know the end of Islam. Now, the problem is just how God works in prophecy and how he's worked in with Israel, with ancient Israel in the past. When Israel got out of line and they started to digress and head back towards Egypt or from whence they came,
he always allowed an enemy to come in and correct them.
Exactly. Exactly. My question is, and I'll answer it, and you guys will, you'll be able to answer it as we go. My question is, because the United States has been such a blessed nation, we can see widespread apostasy in the United States. If anyone's watching the news, I mean, it's just, we could just go on and on and on and on at what's going on in the United States, which, but when we look at the different political parties, we can see who's going in which direction. Now, and I don't want to get into that, and you know yourselves, which one seems to be going more towards God than Absolutely. The other party. Now, I don't, like I say, I don't want to get into this because I don't want to create an argument over this, because this is not what this is about. This is about what God's word says. We should just be aware of what's going on. Is this is a war actually that God is allowing because he has a purpose. His purpose is to bring the United States back to their knees in prayer. The way he's done this with ancient Israel, he's allowed the enemies to come down and lay a licking on them. Right. I propose that in the book of Daniel, Yeshua points us to the war that is going to wake the westernized nations who began under the Judeo-Christian values, who are leaving the Judeo-Christian values, and God is going to lay a licking on them. And who's he going to use? He's going to use the enemies of who? The enemies of Israel. The enemies of the West. He's going to use their enemies to lay a licking on them, and it's going to be God telling them, get back to serving me.
Right.
And that's the plan. In all of this, it's to bring the world to their knees and to recognize who is the Most High.
So, Tom, thank you so much for coming on with us. We're going to probably have more programs on this, and hopefully Tom will be back on with us, and we can cover more information and more details. So this will be like the first in a series. So we're going to close for the evening, and we're going to say blessings to all and good night.